The natural state of the human mind is completely clear and relaxed at all times. The natural state of the human mind is infused with the clear light of wisdom that is present in every moment. And that field of clear light that is the mind registers different impressions that are our thoughts. And many of us learn that our mind is comprised of those thoughts, and so that's what we just learn to pay attention to pay attention to all the thoughts. And we never learn anything about the completely relaxed, stainless, flawless nature of the mind itself. We don't even know it's there, most of us. And even if we hear something like that, we can't believe it, or we can't believe it applies to us somehow. But this is only because we've trained ourselves to pay attention to all the thoughts, to believe that those thoughts are who we are, and to identify ourselves by a history of those thoughts that we've had throughout our life. So this can be likened to looking up in the sky at night and seeing all the stars and planets. That state of existence of just seeing all the thoughts and taking those to be what reality is. It's like looking up at the sky at night on a very dark night and clearly seeing all the stars and planets. And to actualize and enliven the basis of mind, the clear light of mind, is like looking up right now at the sky filled with daytime light, and none of the planets and stars can be seen. They're all there, but they're outshone by the light of day. So these are two illustrations of the different way in which our human mind can appear. One is where, like, the planets and stars at night are so vivid that it's only our thoughts and other impressions that are really, really vivid in the mind. And then the true nature of the mind is that where the impressions continue to register, but they're not the basis of anything. They aren't referred to as any kind of referential process that gives meaning to what life is. Rather, the wisdom mind itself, the wisdom mind, the clear light of the wisdom mind, outshines all these other accumulations of impressions that just flash by one after another, like dream images. And if it wants to play around with some of them, it can. And if it doesn't want to, that's fine. Whatever they are, they are. But they're not referenced as having any particular meaning or importance. So, you know, this is really important for us to know about our minds, because if we know the true nature of our mind, then we can be happy in life and we can provide immediate benefit to ourselves and those close to us through wisdom, and we can also provide very immediate benefit in the world. So this is a very simple way of looking at what the Great Freedom Teaching talks about, and this can, of course, apply to anyone. It has no cultural specificity, and it really doesn't even relate back to any kind of personal identity or individual. It's just a characteristic of what human beings are. So even though this can be addressed in many ways, philosophical, metaphysical, spiritual, scientific, It really doesn't have any reference points, and it needn't have any reference points. It's simply the functionality of what the human mind is in a very basic way. It's not mysterious, it's not esoteric, and it's up to us what we want our minds to do, really. It's entirely up to us. If we want to spend all of our life thinking that we're all of our opinions, in other words, all of this thinking that's flashing around like the stars and planets in the sky at night, then we can. And if we want to familiarize ourselves with this clear light of wisdom that is the field of all those impressions, then we can do that. And, well, how to do that? You know, it sounds so good, a completely relaxed mind at all times, night and day, shining with the clear light of wisdom. That sounds awesome. Well, you know, not only does it sound awesome, but it's a vivid reality. It's a vivid reality here, and it's a vivid reality in more and more people in the world who have this vivid reality 24 hours a day of just the clear light of the wisdom mind that isn't referencing all the thoughts all the time in order to make sense of the world. It doesn't live out of any kind of personal opinions, but rather is completely at rest in this stainless, flawless, forever empty expanse of a mind that doesn't rely upon thinking to decide upon anything. In other words, it's wisdom that's relied upon. It's just the relaxed wisdom, the naturally occurring wisdom that is at the basis of everything. Now, another way to think about this is that this mind that is completely spacious and wide open, it doesn't really have any kind of location. We can't really say where it is. And all these thoughts that appear within it by which we describe a world and a life and other beings, all these thoughts that occur within it are the dynamic energy of the mind. They're just the dynamic energy of the mind and nothing else. They're not something that's powerful in their own right. The thoughts have no independent existence. They have no power in themselves. There is not a single thought that has a power that's independent of mind. Now, this is really important because the dynamic energy of the mind never affects the clear light of the mind itself. The dynamic energy of the mind has no effect whatsoever. This is very practical to us because many of us have learned that our thoughts and what we think are what describes what our moods are. So we pass in and out of all of these different experiential moods in life based upon what we're thinking. Thinking that these labels that describe our thoughts have some kind of power in their own right. Like we think of painful memories from the past and we can't stop thinking about them. So, and we wake up thinking all these thoughts in the morning, so we think, gee, I'm going to have a crummy day because I've had this flashback of memories or whatever it is. And so we learn to use our mind in this very limited way to describe ourselves and what's going on in the world. We believe that these thoughts have an independent nature that can somehow control our well-being, but the thoughts themselves have never had the power to do that. It's just the way we use these thoughts that we're relying upon the thinking and what it describes rather than on the basis of the thinking. The underlying basis of the thinking is the clear light of completely relaxed mind that's always at ease and always wise. It always knows what to do and how to act without thinking about anything. This is very important because it takes us outside the parameters of a mood-based life. Has anyone here ever had a mood-based life? Going in and out of the moods during the day. I only see one hand. Going in and out of different moods during the day, like different weather patterns moving through and subjecting our own well-being to these moods and then probably subjecting others' well-being to the moods as well. I'm in a mood, so I'm going to draw you into my mood. Or I'm going to blame you for my mood. And maybe that's how I'll draw you into it. So the importance of this is that all these descriptions that float through the mind, they're really all equal in being the dynamic energy of the mind. Their label does not impute any significance or importance to them. It's only in our choice to impute significance and importance to the labels rather than to just relax as the clear and open space of mind that causes pain, that causes suffering, that causes us to feel like we need to have lots of opinions in order to substantialize ourselves and who we are, in order to substantialize an identity and show other people who we are. So when we rely on all our thoughts, then we say, well, these are my thoughts, and I'm going to let you know who I am by telling you what my opinions are. And so when we live that way, we pretend that we're made up of all these opinions, and then we try to match up with other people who have the same opinions that we have. And to live this way is extremely limited, and we can see how it causes disharmony within ourselves, and it causes disharmony in relationships too, in families and communities and nations and the world. When there's this disharmony within of a mood-based existence that's so focused on thinking and all of these labels, then no one feels relaxed. Everyone feels tense, and everyone's kind of suspicious of everyone else. We may have all these great ideas about oneness and global human culture, but those ideas are just philosophies. They're political ideals unless in our own being we have the decisive experience in every moment of the oneness of everything. The complete oneness of everything that is allowed by the realization of the wisdom mind, by this wisdom mind that is at the basis of everything. And the only way to really realize that wisdom mind is to stop thinking. In other words, to just relax and allow the thinking to do whatever it will. And as that occurs, the background of this mind that's been ignored becomes more and more obvious. And just like in the morning, dawn appears in the sky, and then eventually all of these planets and stars disappear, so too when we relax and just allow all the thoughts and emotions to do whatever they will, so too, our mind opens up like that, and this clear light of wisdom mind dawns quite naturally. We really don't even have to do anything. It's so natural to us that if we simply hear about it over and over again, it'll become more and more obvious that that really is the nature of our mind, that our mind's never been obscured by these thoughts, and we've never really needed these thoughts to describe who we are, that there's something much more powerful about who we are that can't be found in any of these descriptions of going on in the mind that's constantly thinking about everything. Wisdom is beyond thinking. It's completely beyond thinking. It doesn't need any opinions. Doesn't need any opinions whatsoever to prove itself or to refute anything else. In today's world, it's extremely important that more and more human beings elect to get familiar with the mind as it really is, rather than continuing to persist in these old ways of using the mind. In the mind that is completely free of opinions, all we can see is the bright light of day, the bright light of day that doesn't see a difference, that truly doesn't see a difference between people, that doesn't see a difference that causes separation, that causes disharmony, that causes war, that causes conflict of any kind. When we end the conflict within ourselves, this constant war of thoughts, gotta get more good thoughts, gotta get rid of the bad thoughts. When we end that war within ourselves and just relax into the spaciousness of the basis of mind as it is, then all the conflicts within ourselves completely come to an end, not just for a little while, but forever. So, you know, at first it might be just for a little while, but that may be the first time in our lives that even for a little while we've had no conflict within ourselves. And just knowing that for a little while, even for an instant, is very self-affirming, because we show ourselves something about the nature of our mind that is incontrovertible. No one can argue against it. Even though we may have searched for all kinds of ways to bring an end to our inner disharmony, in one instant of the clear light of wisdom awareness that is at the basis of the mind, in just that one instant, we see that within ourselves is complete relief from all our suffering. Complete relief. And that one instant then very naturally and usually gradually opens up into this completely relaxed way of being that doesn't need to be all tied up in knots all the time. To end this war, to end this conflict within ourselves where we spend our whole life kind of like a robot sorting thoughts. These are the good ones. These are the bad ones. Got to get more good ones. Got to get rid of the bad ones. Got to show everybody else what my opinions are so they'll think I am somebody and so that I'll think I am somebody. All that completely comes to a stop, and there is just this essence of what's really true about everything. When we bring an end to the conflict within ourselves, then immediately we see how this applies to everyone. And not only does it apply to everyone, every human being in the world, but that it really is the basis not only for our own peace of mind, but it's also the basis for peace in the world. It's beyond any kind of political ideology. Through political ideologies of whatever kind and all this thinking about everything, we've never been able to arrive at world peace. It's always just out of our grasp or way away from our grasp. It's like an ever-receding horizon. It's like walking around the world continually and trying to get to the horizon. Well, you know, that would never happen. So you see, there can never be this peace in the world until there's peace within. The peace in the world comes from peace within. It comes from ending the conflict within. Only when we as human beings elect to end the war within, to end the conflict within, to give up all our weapons, to put them all down, only then can we express this as a species. But, you know, that would be wonderful and that would be nice and we'd all love to see that happen, but where does it begin? Where does it begin? It doesn't begin in struggles against nations. It begins at the grassroots. It begins with individual human beings saying, this is who I am. I'm going to take responsibility for it. I'm going to find this peace within myself and hold myself to account for living as that on a daily basis. And then we'll see what opens up from there. And I can guarantee you what opens up from there is something truly amazing. No matter how skilled you may be, what opens up from there is accomplishment beyond anything that you could have imagined, no matter how accomplished you might be. So this is interesting, isn't it? You know, it's not only interesting. Well, first of all, here we have it. We have something about ourselves that is so magnificent and unparalleled that for most of us, when we hear about it, we think, wow, you know, this is going to require at least 12 years of university education for me to learn about this. But this is something that can't be learned. So that is truly astounding. It cannot be learned. It's absolutely impossible to learn it. And it's the birthright of everyone, so everyone has equal access to it. And the only way to know it is to acknowledge it, to completely relax and just allow this clear light to shine through everything, to outshine the need to think about everything obsessively. And when we do, it becomes very, very obvious. So no education is necessary. All that is required is an open mind. And since everyone already has an open mind, everyone is qualified. It doesn't matter what your IQ is or where you live or how much food you have to eat or cars or bicycles or anything, whether you live in a house or not. Nothing matters. Everyone equally has the birthright of this. The reality of every human being is that there is mind naturally present, then that too insists that this clear light of mind is naturally present. It's not the purview of an elect part of the population. It belongs to everyone equally. And in simply hearing about it over and over again, it becomes more and more obvious. The certainty of it in our own being dawns. And all those thoughts that seem to be so insistent, so persistent, naturally fade into the background. So it turns everything upside down, everything we've thought about, everything. How we learn, how we are, what it's like to be a human being. It turns it all upside down completely. Nothing to learn, nothing to effort for, nothing to achieve. We just simply listen to the melody of what's really true about us, and it becomes more and more obvious. And coupled with that, if we want to, if we feel plagued by any persistent kind of thinking, then when it comes up, we can just relax. Rather than get distracted by the thinking itself. Just relax and allow the actual nature of the thinking to be the case. All the thoughts that appear, no matter what they are, they're like a mirage. They're temporary appearances that have no substance. They're completely empty space, just the clear light of the wisdom mind. And one thing that we know about them is that it's guaranteed that they will vanish. They'll vanish in their own right, just like the flight path of a bird in the sky or a line drawn in water. There's absolutely nothing that needs to be done about them. Their nature is sky-like. The nature of mind, of the true pure mind, is sky-like. It's never gotten wrapped up in any thought. We just convince ourselves that it has sometimes, but it really hasn't. So if this is something that is important to us and we really want it to be the case for us, then it will be. So that's simple too. If we want it to be the case for us, it will be. It's not a rocket science, and it's not even ABC. ABC, D, what are the other ones? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, that's difficult. The true nature of our mind is not difficult. Here's another illustration that we could liken it to. All of these things that we think about that are made up of letters, characters, numbers, different symbols of different kinds, all of these things that we think of, that it's like taking the sky and making those symbols out of the sky and putting those symbols, those sky-like symbols together in different ways. It all remains sky. No matter what we make out of it, it's still all sky. It's equally open, it's equally spacious, it's equally free. Does anyone have a question they'd like to ask?
I guess sometimes I'm offering an opinion in a way, but that we see this in terms of science somehow that we can make a good root for our understanding or take of what you're talking about. And I was speaking with Neil this morning when we were talking about the two different brains, the right brain and the left brain.
Mm-hmm.
And what you discussed sounds a little bit like the way the marriage of those two sides, you know, with the working, the natural state that you talk about, seems like in my experience, the marriage is a few things where it's not a conflict or a struggle, but solutions come because you kind of have the non-linear being able to accept the linear with, you know, a miraculous efficiency where things, you know, are relatively
effortless.
So I'm wondering if just as a conversation topic that efficient
who knows? You know, no one described anything that way 100 years ago, and 100 years from now, no one will describe it that way. So it's a wonderful way to talk about things. You know, it's a conversation topic, like you said. It's based on scientific materialism. And so the goal of scientific materialism is to explain and prove that things exist. And so, you know, scientific materialism, we've been wrapped up in that as a human culture for a long time, and we get more and more wrapped up in it as time goes by. But remember what I described about the ever-receding horizon? This is a good description of science, isn't it? The science is the ever-receding horizon. It's like walking around the globe endlessly. But, you know, there's a subtle assumption in scientific discovery that at some point we're going to have the ultimate scientific discoveries. And then in any era in which we live, there are those human beings who think this is the ultimate of what science can be. This is the ultimate of what science can do. We have finally achieved. But that quickly passes, and there's running after the receding horizon. When we know the naked mind as it is, the naked direct perception of the completely open mind in each moment, then we know the basis of all those things. We know the basic of all human knowledge. And the more familiar we are with that underlying basis of the mind, the more we can see all human knowledge clearly. So we not only can see all our own points of view that are appearing in our mind very clearly, but we can see all human knowledge clearly, whatever it might be. And we can play with all that human knowledge in a very adept way. So we can play with all that human knowledge in a way that is beyond the knowledge itself. Rather than getting caught up in the knowledge and trying to prove things from within that knowledge itself, it's from the all-encompassing vantage that is beyond the knowledge, but yet has access to all of it, that wonderful things can come about. So you see, this is the juncture where we are right now, and this is very important. We're very limited currently in our ability to solve big human problems. big problems facing the earth. So we need to have more of our mind power behind those. And this is to talk about things in a very simple way that any human being can understand. We have to have more of the expansiveness of our mind power that includes all knowledge but is beyond it. Now, one of the interesting things about the all-encompassing mind of wisdom is that it does contain all knowledge. As inconceivable as that may seem to us, that just this mind that is concentrated here in the human body, it contains all knowledge. Not just things we personally have learned, but all knowledge, past, present, and future. And the more familiar that we get with this basis of the mind, the more we can see that that's true. And then the more skill we have in using different knowledge bases that do occur, but using them in a really profound way, beyond anything that's ever been known. And no matter who we are, this applies to us. So, you know, it doesn't mean that we have to get a new job, so to speak. It just means that whatever our passions are or whatever we like about life and feel drawn to, that it's greatly exalted when we grow familiar with the nature of our mind.
I find that the more I'm present, mm-hmm. the more I feel in rest, mm-hmm. rest. And also the opposite, the more I even think of resting, the more I come back to the present moment. As if it's just this one thing that goes totally together. And there are many people that are talking about being in the present moment, and, you know, like living the here and now through meditation or anything like that. And I guess I have two questions. The first one is, what is different basically in resting than just being present and being in certain moments? So whenever I even, if someone, let's say there's a thought coming up or anything and I think of resting, immediately I think of coming back to the present moment. It's immediately this feeling of rest. And also I don't understand how it's possible to really talk about or connect understanding the teachings and getting more and more familiar with it, as you say, through time. And this is like something that the more you come to the talks or the more you read the text, the more you will get familiar with it. I mean, you will always come back to the same present moment, sitting here right now and wanting to, choosing basically, mm-hmm. to rest or not to rest. Mm-hmm. How can it be related to time? Maybe time is free, or if there is no such thing as time, mm-hmm.
I didn't say there was no such thing as time. I said timelessness and time are not two. So the answer to your question is that there's no need to think so much about it. Really, there's no need to think so much about it. It's just so, you know, it's the way it is. That for certain people, just hearing about the true nature of their mind, certainty dawns in them without ever resting or trying to come into a present moment. When there's the attempt to come into the present moment, then there's a process of conceptualization and analysis about the present and about now. But the nature of the mind is that it's completely naked of everything. There is no now in the mind. There is no present in the mind. So the naked nature of the mind, it is timeless, which is the great time that includes time. So you see, there are two approaches that work for people everywhere and have throughout all of time. All of human history, and one is to just hear about the nature of mind and the certainty about that dawns, and the other is to rest as awareness for short moments, repeated many times until it becomes automatic, or a combination of the two. So it's very simple. It goes beyond anything the mind can think or do. These are just, it's easy. It's completely easy.
So many times that, you know, you hear people, they don't even know if they're resting, and they're not sure about resting or not resting, and yeah, I don't know, maybe it's a little bit of sharing my own experience of, I just find that just being present, and maybe it's, that there is a certain effort that comes along, just like there will be a certain effort in resting in a short moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's important to just keep the focus on yourself, and whatever works for you is great. You know, whatever works for you is absolutely great. That's all that's important. But what works for you isn't necessarily the thing that is going to work for everyone. Do you see what I'm saying? We each have a sense of how and when and where to rest and what really works for us. There's no specific way to do it. But what's most important is the following, that we don't enter into a state whereby we're a witness that's watching appearances, including the present or now or rest or anything else. So to have a witness watching appearances is just another anomaly of thinking. It's not the clear light of wisdom. The clear light of wisdom is inseparable from the thoughts. It's seeing each moment perceptually wide open and complete and identical. So you see, that can't be thought about. It can't be made into anything, not even the here and now. Rest is beyond thinking. You know, it's completely beyond thinking. It's something that when we relax our body and mind completely, it's just relaxed. There's nothing to think about. Whatever appears, appears. It's just the dance and song of whatever happens. There's no need to have editorial comment on it. You know, like the editorial page in the newspaper where there's all the commentary on everything that's been written in the newspaper and other common popular events. There's just no need to comment. Whatever appears, appears, and it's transparent. It's completely transparent. But it isn't a witness watching those appearances. It's just the mind is that appearance itself. But there's no distraction by it. That's the real beauty of rest. It's completely beyond the need to conceptualize or analyze.
How would you describe the intuition? Or how is intuition connected to the endless mind?
Mm-hmm. Well, it depends on what kind of intuition you're talking about. Sometimes the wisdom mind, the endless mind, is spoken of as intuitive mind. However, there's a distinction between that and common intuition. Common intuition is the kind of thing where we have an intuition. Either we have an intuition that something's going to happen, and then it does happen. That's common intuition. But then we may have, and we tell somebody about it, oh, I had this intuition, something's going to happen, and it did happen. But then we have lots of other intuitions of all kinds of things that don't happen, and we don't tell anyone about that. We don't say, oh, I had this intuition, but then it didn't happen. So you see, that's common intuition. Do you understand the distinction? Uh-huh. And you see what I'm saying? Uh-huh. Did you have something about that, more about that, about intuition, that you'd like to ask?
No, because I think I know from last month that sometimes when I want an answer, that it just flows into my mind.
Oh, uh-huh.
That's what you're talking about.
Oh, absolutely. The relaxed mind is so beautiful because there's none of that obsessive thinking in order to arrive at a decision. It's just completely relaxed, and then there's trust and confidence in that, and then the answer just naturally comes, and you know that it will come at some point with no need to be concerned about it or be agitated, uh-huh. Yeah, that's wisdom. That's wisdom. And this is the natural state of the mind, not just sometimes, but all the time. Just complete clarity and freedom. Ease. Complete ease. It's nice, isn't it? Yeah. Natural. Michael?
For a few fortunate beings, it seems to be possible to realize, have the realization of the grounded being almost upon hearing it, or very soon, for the first time hearing it. Sometimes without having been searching, having practiced anything, and for others, they may have to practice many decades and still find it very difficult to get to that realization of the ground of being. So I think you're saying it matters not, but I think it does matter to someone who has been practicing for a long time. Still, finds it difficult for that final step. So I see that all the points of view that one has developed and cultivated over a long time pose an incredible barrier. And so I wonder how far or how much is it necessary to really let go of all of that and to kind of renounce it in speech, in thought, and in conversation, to just let go of all of that. All those reference points of systems of, trying to understand the world.
Oh, sure. Oh, those are two great questions, and I'll answer the last one first. And that is that in just gaining familiarity with awareness in a very natural way, with the light of that dawning more and more in your mind, those other things will stop. So the referencing to all these other systems will come to a stop. It's just naturally and very gradually comes about. Now, the answer to your first question, too, this is something that has been very, very important to the Great Freedom Teaching, because, like you said, and I know you personally have been a seeker for many years, and I notice both you and someone else who comes here, too, who have a great deal of profound meditation experience. I watch you and I see flies land on you and all kinds of things, and you just sit there. Then the fly leaves eventually. Wow. Cool. But you see, whatever our circumstantial points of view are, whether they're points of view about spiritual practice or there are other points of view, non-spiritual points of view, so to speak, those are our points of view, and that's what we have to rest with, to rest as. We don't need to get rid of them or adopt anything new. It's just when they come up, we rest. So when these references to the way things have been and how difficult it has been, or the different systematized ways you've been going about doing things, when these come about, to just rest. And they will just vanish naturally in and of themselves. Now, one other thing about that is that when I know of the particular tradition you've been involved in, and I'm not going to mention the name of it here, however, it's a tradition in which there are many, many different approaches, 84,000 approaches. Now, that's, we'd say that's a lot. You know, that's incomprehensible. But if you went somewhere when you were looking, for example, to find out who you are, and you said, I want to find out who I am, and I know there are 84,000 approaches, can you tell me what the quickest approach is? Do you see what I'm saying? But especially for Westerners, many of us don't know what to ask. We just hear that something's possible through a particular modality, so then we travel along that path, hoping that that might be able to happen for us. So I understand, and I really very compassionately relate to what you're talking about. The teachings that are very direct and very, very unerring, there's really only one in all of those 84,000. Only one. So you'd not only have to, you'd have to ask a person who knew that. So in this way, if we have had a very arduous course of decades of all kinds of practice, we can be compassionate with ourselves in that way by just saying, no one knew what to tell me and I didn't know where to look. So now I'll just rest.
The concept of purification is very sticky.
For you?
Yeah. Having been with that concept for a long time, you know, whenever something happens, you know, on whatever level, and it kind of dissolves, it's always the idea of, you know, this is kind of purifying or going out or dissipating or, you know, the sense of, this gradual sense of having to work on the purification of whatever has been accumulated in, you know, the endless past.
You're doing very well with that, and you see the results of it already. It's astounding because many of us learn in our backgrounds, whether they're through traditions of East or West, that we're flawed in some way, that we're flawed by original sin or some other kind of sin, or we're flawed by karma. And then we believe we need to make ourselves better. So we spend all of our lives looking at ourselves as flawed and that somehow we need to be fixed or purified. And then sometimes this plays itself out in different traditions too, saying that, well, the light of mind is pure and the appearances are less pure, or they're impure and they need to be purified. However, the light of mind and what appears in mind, it's all mind and it's all pure. From the beginningless beginning, it's originally pure. So this is a great relief. It's really a great relief. There's nothing to do. And whatever appears is whatever appears. Whatever happens is whatever happens. There's no way to control that. The ultimate purification is just the resting essence of the mind as it is. That's the ultimate purification.
So what I was asking is like cultivating on point of view in conversation and in thinking, to what degree that needs to be renounced. Like totally let go of, not used anymore.
Well, do you mean being distracted by talking about it or and thinking about it?
In talking about it or thinking in those concepts, I hold on to that as being real in some way. So.
Well, here's the key distinction. If the thoughts come up, or you're speaking about a particular conceptual framework, and you're distracted from rest, from the clear presence of rest in your speaking or in your thinking, then that's distraction. But if the clear presence of awareness is present in the speaking and the thinking, then you're not distracted. It may just take a while for you to sort all these things out. And, you know, sometimes you may talk about them, other times you won't. But over time, all of these concepts that you've accumulated will naturally settle out, and you'll have no need to think about them or speak about them anymore. Your speaking and your thinking they'll naturally bloom with a new way of thinking and speaking about yourself. Not to worry. It's just, well, you know, this is, you have been very, very committed to a certain way of looking at things. And then, you know, there are other people who are equally committed to looking at things through psychological reference points, ardently committed to psychological reference points. So these are just different systems, different ways of looking at things. And for one person like you, it might be spiritual reference points. For another person, it might be this onus of psychology, looking at everything as within a psychological framework. Just rest, and all of those things that you've used as references will naturally settle out, and you'll see them very, very clearly. And perhaps be able to have some kind of revolutionary way of looking at it all.
How does intention fit into this, into the
answer? And what do you mean by intention?
Because when I feel I just let the rest of mind, I think, well, there's no progression. I mean, everything stays the same. Wonderful, but the same. When something comes to me as an intuitive intention, that helps me. But then, yeah, sure, I will use the mind for it as well, because it gives a kind of direction to my energy.
Yes. Uh huh.
And I don't know whether there's. If it's anyway possible to direct your energy while you're in the endless mind, if it always is part of the thinking mind.
Well, that's a very good question. The what you're talking about. It naturally occurs to you to proceed in a certain way. Great. And also, though, with a restful mind, there's no attachment. Like, it may occur to you to proceed in a certain way, and you effortlessly proceed in that way, and probably quite skillfully as well, because restful mind is extremely skillful. And skill beyond thinking, beyond that can come about from thinking. But the initial plan you may have had is very fluid. You don't have to have it be a certain way. Just whatever unfolds, unfolds, and it unfolds in an incredible way, not a way limited by ideas. Yeah. And then there's just the thinking that goes along with that, whatever it is. But it isn't a thinking that's tormented or even agitated in any way. There's no anxiety whatsoever. There's no anxiety about a result at all. And at the same time, there's full power and force of what you're calling intention.